Okay, we're good.
Fabulous. Well, if you're listening in, thanks for joining us. We are joined today live with Dr. Cheryl Selman, and you know, we've invited people to call in with their questions and answers, and we're lucky enough to have Cheryl's time to talk about breast cancer and the breast cancer gene, and really, I guess, be appreciative of the fact that this has come into the media recently and we have the opportunity to do this. For those of you who don't know Cheryl, she's an expert in hormone health. She's a naturopath, a psychotherapist. She's an author. She's a radio host. She's an editor. She's one very, very clever lady. So, Cheryl, thank you for giving my listeners an opportunity to ask their own questions rather than me just assuming that they want to know exactly what I'm asking you.
Well, thanks for being here and making all this happen. I love the opportunity to have these conversations, Natalie. There's so much women really need to know, and this is a forum that we can have important conversations through.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It is so very important, and obviously something that you and I are extremely passionate about. But not only that, it's so important that this message gets out to people, because people can make their own informed decisions and not feel powerless or afraid. More than anything, have just some more insight and some more confidence in the decisions that they are making.
Well, that's the name of the game, isn't it? I know it's changed my life, and I'm sure it has also changed your life by gaining that knowledge. And, you know, it's taken me from a place of a lot of health challenges and suffering into a journey that has left that all behind. So
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Yeah, it is our passion, so it's great to be able to share. We have lots to share with women.
Now, obviously the biggest thing at the moment for everybody is the breast mastectomy and cancer and the genetics behind that. And so, I mean, I want to start with a question that someone sent in to me. But before I do that, one thing she said was that every human has the BRCA gene. Is that correct?
Well, yeah. You know, yes, because the thing that really upsets me and frustrates me when we hear these stories, like with the Angelina Jolie story, it's all kind of boiled down to really simple terms. Genes are very complicated things. Mm-hmm. To understand what this BRCA gene means, you need to have a little background given to you. Otherwise, you're going to assume things that are not true, and that's what's happened. So when we talk about this gene, which has been labeled BRCA gene, BR for breast cancer, breast, CA for cancer, they put it together, there really isn't a gene that's called a BRCA gene. It's really the company that patented, and by the way, you know, the company that does the test is trying to patent, to own these genes. And the first thing we need to understand is that we know about gene mutations. We've heard most of our knowledge about genes is talking about gene mutations, and that affects maybe 1 or 2% of the population. We're not talking about gene mutations, and we are mentioning BRCA1 or BRCA2. We're talking about what is known as gene expressions. And the science, the wonderful emerging science of epigenetics, is all about understanding gene expressions. So gene expressions basically is saying that on every gene, there are up to 30,000 different switches. These little switches, up to 30,000, one gene has 30,000 switches. So we only have, the way to understand this, we only have about 30,000 genes that have been discovered in the human genome, but we have about 180,000 proteins that are made from the instructions from genes. So if we only have 30,000 genes, how can we have 180,000 different proteins out there? That's because one gene can make multiple variations on a theme. And when we are talking about the BRCA gene, we're talking about a gene expression. And a gene expression is like the software in your computer. It can work properly. It can be altered. You can have many variations on a theme. Or you can have it impaired, and that causes all sorts of other glitches that does not give the right information and instructions. So these are the expressions of genes that can be profoundly altered through diet, lifestyle, the environment, everything really in our physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual environment is now known to impact our genes, our gene expression.
Totally. Okay. I think the thing that I wanted to reiterate, because in that article that I wrote, I talked about my son who has cystic fibrosis. And what I was trying to do, and it probably wasn't a good example, but what I was trying to say was that that's a mutation. That's a genetic mutation, and obviously he has symptoms because of that. Well, actually, no, he doesn't have symptoms, which is a wonderful thing. But what I was trying to say was that even someone who has a genetic mutation, if you put them in the right environment and are aware, even they can be a better version of themselves. So imagine if we're talking about a gene expression, not actually a mutation, that I think it's amazing.
That's very profound insight, Natalie. Mm. And just to take this little step further, this BRCA gene is in a class of gene expressions known as tumor suppressor genes. So tumor suppressor genes, and this one aspect known as the BRCA gene has like thousands of variations, right? Because there are so many variations for each gene. And some of them are enhancing the function of the instructions to suppress tumor growth, and others can be impaired. So we can inherit impaired gene expressions, and that requires us to be more vigilant. So if we can be on the proper path with a really good diet, we can reduce toxic exposure. All of these potential issues can actually be upregulated or downregulated. We actually have this power. And this BRCA1 gene is in this category of tumor suppressor genes. That's really what it's known as, because when they're working, they help suppress the information that can lead to genes, to tumors growing, cancers growing, DNA going awry, information going awry, or when they're working properly, they make sure that DNA is repaired and anything that is, inappropriate action is, or a cell that is growing inappropriately is destroyed. That's what tumor suppressors do. That's how the body works. That's how it keeps us balanced and functioning in a world that constantly is challenging our DNA and causing DNA damage. But if the instructions are working and if we're supporting it with food and diet and the right thinking, we actually can switch on, optimize, compensate, and stay on a healthy path.
Yeah, well, I will, you have answered a question that someone sent in, but I will read it again to make sure that, because I like the analogy that she uses. She said that we all have BRCA1 and BRCA2 tumor suppressor genes, which is what you're talking about. Mutations in these two genes lead to the inability to regulate cell death, which therefore leads to uncontrolled cell growth resulting in cancer. If these genes are mutated and malfunctioning in the first place, why do you believe that the epigenetic modification will have an effect on their tumor-suppressing ability? And then she says, my analogy is like when there is a blackout, surely turning the light switch on or off isn't going to make a difference to the light bulb.
Well, actually, it doesn't quite work that way. You know, I've talked
to quite a few people. No, that's what I'm thinking. I'm reading it and realizing we're talking about a mutation and an expression, and that's where I think the confusion is.
Yeah, and it's very confusing because it takes conversations like this to have more understanding that there is definitely another level of what's impacting our genes. In fact, gene expressions can be upregulated for the short term, long term. They can be passed on. You know, the work that I do with nutritional genomic testing, we're looking at inherited gene expressions that are not giving the proper information, the proper directions, but With nutrigenomics and this world of epigenetics, there are genes that have been studied that actually have been known to be modifiable through diet, lifestyle, and the environment. We have much more power over how these genes get expressed. It's not so black and white as a light switch, that the electricity is down and you can't switch on. In actual fact, it's a much more dynamic give and take that's going on between us and our genes, not fixed, mutable, inherited mutations that even, as you said with your son, through the diet, there are other pathways that can help to upregulate function. It's, you know, the more I study the science of epigenetics, the more I learn about it, the more in awe I am of the power we have to alter our destiny, our genetics.
Yeah, I think that is spot on. And the other thing I've learned since having Geordie, my son, is that, you know, often when we're deficient ourselves, then that's when we're more likely to pass on genes to our children that are mutated. So, you know, I mean, there's certain things and certain supplements that you would knowingly, if I knew, that I could have made sure that were my levels were at a certain range to have less of a chance of that happening. When I look at it like that, it makes so much sense in terms of moving forward and making sure that we're as healthy as possible to prevent any sorts of gene expressions being expressed, I guess.
And I've talked to some of the experts who are really looking into this field, and there are substances that actually can alter these tumor suppressor genes to function better if they have, if you do have a particular gene expression that isn't giving the right information. There are ways to help improve that message and that function. So the take-home message here for everyone is to realize that we can affect our destiny. We can enhance our body's ability to function in a stressed world, in a toxic world. Whatever we've come in with, we have the ability to improve our health and optimize our health and heal our body. And that's the message I really want to give to everybody, not living in fear. And, you know, fear is a terrible thing, and it really suppresses our immune system. So if you want to alter your gene expressions, hang out in fearful energy all the time.
Well, someone asked that question, actually. They said, you mentioned toward the end of the interview that we did the other day that the research on fear and its impact on prognosis for breast cancer sufferers. I would like more detail around the research and the name of some of the researchers, if possible, so she could find out more. She's a psychologist by the looks of it, and she said this study could have implications for the work I do as a psychologist.
Yeah, you know, I don't have the names of the researchers. You'd have to do a search, but there's a lot that's being done on the impact of stress on our genes, and certainly it is well known on our immune system. And, you know, it makes sense. If you are in a stressful state, your immune system is compromised. All the instructions to support the body to flourish are actually constricted because you are in a survival mode. You're operating out of the you know, the reptilian part of your brain. You are living in fear. You cannot even make wise decisions in that space. And it's shutting all these systems down. It's raising cortisol levels. And
Absolutely.
What does cortisol do? Raises insulin. What does insulin do? Beads cancer cells.
It's amazing, though, too, because, I mean, for many people, they're living in a constant state of that fight or flight. That, you know, they're not even switching off.
Well, this is the truth, and that's why we need to understand how important it is to bring balance into our life, to surround ourselves with things that cause our bodies to flourish, to optimize the health. You know, with the adrenal testing I do and some of the parameters I look at, it is known that a strong emotion like anger or fear can suppress the immune system for hours. And vice versa, and an emotion of joy or gratitude can switch on the immune system and upregulate, enhance it for hours and hours. We are living in a world that's constant feedback. We are interacting with our world, and it's either supporting our health or it's challenging our health. So it's
quite also quite interesting from a Chinese medicine perspective, because each organ also has an emotion attached to it. And so often the emotion that's most prominent will indicate actually on an organic level what's going on in the body. It's fascinating when you put all the pieces together and be able to, well, I guess you and I can stand back and look in and observe with patients and in the clinics and, you know, be able to see this. But for people that don't get to understand that, you know, I guess we're here to spread that message of how important it is to look at your life not just from a physical perspective, but right through emotional, spiritual, like you mentioned.
Well, they're all connected. It's because they're all part of the whole. Everything is affecting everything else. And I just tell people, you know, take one little baby step and start there. It can get overwhelming. It may be getting your shoes off and walking on the grass and touching the earth and bringing that healing energy that way. It may be taking 8 glasses of good, pure water a day. It may be taking 5 minutes of deep breathing. It's just starting somewhere because it will lead you to the same end result of greater harmony and balance. And the more you are in balance, the more you make balanced choices.
This is true. Well, she also asks, which is relevant to what we're talking about, she said people try and do their absolute best to eat well and exercise and carry out a positive attitude, including people that have cancer, and those who've chosen alternative treatments who've still died in spite of this. And she said, I know a few people in this boat and wonderful people who fought very hard and never gave up. And she said, I'm sure that you both realize that there are also people who do all the wrong things and never suffer from cancer or anything else and live to a ripe old age. What do you and I both make of this?
Well, I can, you know, lots of levels we can answer this question on. So let me answer it on the level of what I've been learning through the nutrigenomic testing, because that has been a really profound insight into these deeper issues. Because, yes, we can all, you know, quote unquote, eat well, whatever that means. That's you know, that's open to, you know, to
I know,
interpretation,
that's
right?
What you and I might think of eating well to other people is, you know, totally, we look like freaks to some people, I'm sure.
and absolutely. And then if we can look deeper at the level of the genes, this is where it gets really interesting, Natalie, because there are some people that thrive on, based on their genes, based on this nutrigenomic panel, that need a high-fat diet, up to 35% of their fats, particular fats, not just any fats, particularly olive oil. Then there's percentage of people that really only do well in olive oil, never have flaxseed oil. Flaxseed oil could be pro-inflammatory, and vice versa. And then I also look at this panel that has to do, very important panel, of phase 1 and phase 2 detoxification. So if you can't properly detoxify the exposure to the chemicals that you're exposed to, then you are really in trouble. It's not so much what we are exposed to, it's how efficient our livers are in the two stages of breaking down fat-soluble toxins into water-soluble forms so they can be then removed. If that's impaired, you get the production of more toxic chemicals. And if your body, if your liver can't properly do phase two and remove these toxins that have been transformed into water-soluble forms, that is a risk factor. So I get to see on this deeper level the people who have the greatest trouble in being able to do phase one and phase two. It doesn't matter how well you eat if you don't know how to target your specific nutritional needs based on your genes. You may not hit the bullseye.
So that's, and you know, what you're saying also is those people that do all the wrong things and don't suffer, obviously that function in their body is different to somebody else.
Well,
and so that's part of that puzzle as well, you know. Why do some people be affected and others aren't?
Well, yeah, we're kind of generalizing, hypothesizing right now. But I can tell you that most people in this day and age, at least from the small cross-section of the several hundred people I've worked with so far, I can tell you that we all are challenged in having efficient detoxification pathways, which means we need to optimize all those pathways and make sure through diet and targeted supplements that we are enhancing the detoxification pathways and all the other issues that are related, including how well we're dealing with antioxidants, how well we're able to metabolize folic acid, a critical nutrient that impacts how well we detoxify and do DNA repair. And these are subtle, invisible things to our eyes. We don't even see them through blood testing. You need to, you know, you're not going to go to a doctor and get this kind of deep, you know, like traveling deeper into our being to see where these vulnerabilities lie. Mm. So this, to me, has answered a lot of the questions that seem to be mysteries for people. Why do some, you know, become vulnerable and others aren't? I think it has to do on the level of these gene expressions and how efficient people are in doing DNA repair and detoxifying and reducing inflammation and being able to actually make the vitamin D hormone. That's a gene issue. So some people can't convert it from their sunshine or from their vitamins into the hormone that is major, major hormone for protection against cancer.
Mm. It's very interesting, too, just touching back on that emotional, I guess. Oh, I don't even know if it... Yeah, it's your emotional. But, you know, from all the people that I've ever met that have conquered cancer, there is just something about their mindset. And I sort of put that out there and I got ridiculed for doing that. And I don't think I was articulating my message properly because, you know, there's a difference between, I understand no one wants to die from cancer, I get that, and they're saying, I don't want this to beat me, but there's just something else with these people that I've met that they've got this deeper understanding of how their mind works over their body.
I'm a psychotherapist by training and focusing on mind-body approaches. I've done a lot of work on myself and in my practice, and what I say to everybody who's dealing with any illness of any sort, there is always an emotional wound that needs healing because we know from all the neuropeptides, emotions create these chemical messengers and they affect every system of the body. That is another piece of the puzzle that must be addressed. You have to go in and heal the wounds that suppress and shut down the life force.
Yes, so I think that's also a big piece of the puzzle because it's one thing to go, oh, yeah, well, I don't want to die and I want to beat this and I will beat this, which is fantastic, but without understanding more about how the mind works, you know, it's just another piece of the puzzle in terms of us healing ourselves from anything, really, not just cancer.
Well, if you're faced with any sort of chronic illness, then you can assume there are some unconscious issues that are needing your attention.
Well, that's the same as fertility too. When I see fertility patients, there's, you know, so often boils down to this. You know, people telling themselves that for whatever reason they don't realize that, but on a deeper level they're telling themselves either they're not worthy or they shouldn't have a baby, or that just has a massive impact. And obviously there are other deeper things that they need to deal with. But to identify that that's pretty major in itself, I guess.
Well, it's very profound because I've seen huge shifts, whether it's with women dealing with infertility or people dealing with chronic illnesses, or people are just frustrated because they are encountering the same old painful pattern in their life that has gone on forever and ever. And when they get to a place of doing that inner work and are able to release the energy, their body transforms, their circumstances transform overnight in some cases. Yes. And there's a German doctor named Dr. Hammer, you might have heard of him. He was very profound. He could see that when people released deep-seated emotions, when they kind of had their ahas, he could actually check with MRIs. He could see the places in their brain that changed, which led to a healing in the body.
And that's the thing, too. Actually think that they're not connected, given that they're all in the one body, is madness.
Exactly. So, you know, from my perspective, I'm working with people, we do need to understand how to support the body at the most profound level. And it's not just about, you know, having a good diet or having juices. Unfortunately, it's not quite that simple. And we need to bring balance and harmony into our emotions. We have to examine the thinking processes and the programs we operate with. And we have to get into a spiritual connection. We have to find that power within us to heal. We've all seen miraculous things happen to people when they reconnect on those levels. And that is really the lesson that life is giving us that brought these experiences to us in the first place.
Yeah, it's amazing. You had a question there from somebody before. I've got some other questions that aren't related to
I did. Okay, this is Rebecca from Margaret River. Hello, Rebecca. She said, what would be a few things I could incorporate into my daily life to get my hormone levels back to normal, and also tips for menopause? Well, here's what I say about some of the key tips. Menopause, if our body was in harmony, if we were detoxing efficiently, if we were balancing our blood sugar levels, if we really nourished our adrenal glands, we are designed to transition from our menstruating years into our non-menstruating years symptom-free, effortlessly. So that's normal. It is not normal to have hot flushes, night sweats, weight gain, whatever that we are told is normal. So what the menopausal journey with symptoms is all about is really the message that our body is offering us to wake up. We need to attend to things. The time we are in our 50s and the average age of menopause, which if I may define it as 12 complete months without a menstrual cycle, that's the real definition. Mm-hmm. Anything that is before that, where you have irregular menstrual cycles and they come once in a while, but if you have not gone 12 complete months, you're perimenopausal. And perimenopausal is generally the time when all those symptoms arise. And what are they about? I can tell you what they are about. They are about adrenal glands that are really fatigued. So we are very adrenally challenged. I also can say that it's due to a liver that is overworked, congested, and it has to do with compromised digestive system. So we have either inflammation going on, we have poor gut flora because of antibiotics, because of the pill, all those things that wipe out the gut flora. And our body is seriously out of balance. And it shows up as symptoms. Mm-hmm. And you don't suppress those symptoms or you don't eliminate those symptoms by taking the pill or bioidentical hormones or hormone replacement therapy. It's just adding fuel to the fire.
Yeah.
We're putting more toxins into our body.
Yeah, I think it's quite interesting because it's definitely it's obvious. It's an obvious sign that the body's not passing the baton, so to speak, isn't it? From what would be the reproductive organs releasing hormones and switching that over to, you know, other parts of your body to take on that. So that's part of that too. It's supposed to be this transition, and all of a sudden it's become this. It's almost a process of, like, you know, some women 5, 6, 7 years, and it keeps on going, and it's not supposed to be like that.
Well, it's not what it appears to, it's not what it's been labeled to be. Do you know what I mean? People who are suffering, women who are suffering, it's not menopause. I have not yet met one woman who I've tested through saliva testing, looking at their adrenals, that had properly functioning adrenal glands. And I'm talking about young women as well as older women.
Yeah, it is. It's very, very interesting. A couple of weeks ago, my adrenals were screaming at me. I was flattened, like I was completely flattened. I had the most intense headaches, my eyes, the pain in my eyes, the pain in my body. And, you know, if you were to say to a medical professional that I've got adrenal fatigue, so to speak, that's not actually a recognized thing.
Well, I remember lecturing in Sydney last year, and a woman was saying that she went to her doctor saying, I think I have adrenal exhaustion, and her response to her was, what's that?
I know.
But your knowledge with Chinese medicine and the work you're doing, and my knowledge with testing hormones and studying some Chinese medicine, and just my own personal journey, I have to say, more than anything else, has revealed to me that the key thing that affects how well our hormones are being produced and are flowing and are balanced in our body has to do with our adrenal glands, these two key organs.
Yeah, I was blown away by, whilst I was living it, I wasn't excited about it, but afterwards being able to recognize and identify that experience, I was grateful for that because, A, I could actually decode what my body was telling me And B, you know, like you said, drawing on personal experience is an amazing way to be able to help other people. So to have gone through that at the time, whilst it was pretty crappy, you know, now I can go, wow. And my body dealt with that very quickly, and I went and got all sorts of, you know, care for that, acupuncture and some spinal care and obviously supplements, and just being aware that I needed to make some changes at that moment because my body was screaming out for some help. But, yeah, really looking at what your body is telling you and appreciating that, that, you know, we don't know, when I say we, the medical profession doesn't know a lot of this sort of stuff. It's very much treatment and symptom based rather than looking at the root of why these things are happening.
And that's our challenge. So let me just say to Rebecca, who wanted a few tips, what I would say, I think acupuncture is phenomenal. And it's a fantastic modality that can, in a sense, diagnose the state of your energy systems and then help to rebalance them. So I love acupuncture. I use it as part of my, you know, preventative strategies that I incorporate on a regular basis. I think that there's so much I can say about adrenals. In fact, if I may mention, if you go to my website, whatwomenmustknow.com, I have some special reports, and one of those special reports is all about adrenals. So women can learn about it, because most women didn't know. I didn't know. I suffered from insomnia, from panic attacks. I suffered from allergies. I suffered from arthritis, aches and pains, mood swings. I had a litany of symptoms, and they were all connected to exhausted adrenal glands, because I was pushing myself too hard.
Yeah.
My body was inflamed. I was eating the wrong food. I wasn't managing my blood sugar levels. I was doing everything wrong in my 40s. And probably,
yeah, well, it's interesting. I mean, I think I could just identify how much stress that I was faced in that short period of time, and how my body just shut down to basically just sort of go, hang on, stop. You have to stop, sort of thing. And it was amazing. And I think, too, the healthier it is, that we are, the quicker we can recover from these things as well. And it doesn't necessarily mean that just because, well, use the example of your adrenals, just because your adrenals are screaming out saying, hey, I'm really struggling here, it doesn't have to be this, you know, year-long recovery. When we know what we need to do and when we're healthy, we can kind of recover quite quickly.
Well, you know, I hadn't a clue, and that, you know, what you said is so important, which is why I appreciate these conversations, because when I was going through this in my early 40s, I didn't know what was happening to me. I just knew I was waking up with these terrible panic attacks at 4 a.m. in the morning every night, and I was awake for 2 hours obsessing about every, you know, thing that could go wrong, and it was that pit of my stomach that was just horrible, and I didn't understand for years what it was. So I did the psychotherapy thing, right? I mean, I was a psychotherapist back then, so I thought it was some psychological issue, and I saw the whole slew of practitioners who couldn't resolve it, because you know what? It wasn't a psychological issue. It was a physiological message that I had not yet learned about.
Amazing.
I didn't know how to read the symptoms.
Well, it's actually interesting that you said about arthritis, because I had someone else ask a question. Oh, did you finish answering Rebecca's question first, I should say?
Well, I would just want to say that, you know, rest is really important to support the adrenals and to give ourselves permission. Vitamin C is one of the most important vitamins that the adrenals need, so making sure you're getting adequate amounts of vitamin C, getting good minerals, which is also required, and you may want to work with some adaptogens. There are some formulas to support adrenals. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have much more in-depth work that I do with adrenals, but that's just some general ideas to work with. And I want to say one other thing before I leave the subject. Every single woman who's listening to our conversation needs to support adrenals for the rest of your life. This is one of the critical areas that supports fertility, proper hormonal balance, proper sleep, proper mood, proper immune system, good functioning cognitive functions in the brain. Everything is dependent on strong, healthy adrenal glands. So it has to be part of a foundational program, and we need to understand that and give that support our entire life. I wish we were Chinese medicine teaches that kidney energy is the root of your hormones, root of your life force, your rejuvenative, recuperative powers. And that's
and it's so amazing because every patient that I see on some level is deficient in the, through the kidney function. It's just the way we are in modern world. But
in our
so
Western
it is. It just goes to show why, yeah, we need to really support that. Just because you touched on arthritis, I had someone actually write in and say that she was in her late 30s and had developed arthritis. She said, I'm nervous this is related to inflammation. Would love to hear Cheryl's take on arthritis.
Well, arthritis is an inflammatory state that's going on in your body. Now, many things fuel inflammation, right? Mm. So you have to, again, have a proper evaluation of what's happening. You know, sugar generates inflammation. If you're gluten intolerant, and personally, I think everybody should be off of wheat, whether you're gluten or not, because wheat is such a toxic substance that generates inflammation. So you
and the
have
other thing
to,
with wheat is that it, people say to me, well, why could we have it once upon a time? And it's because it's also it's nothing like what it's not looked, it's been genetically modified so far from what it actually was once upon a time as well. So that's even worse again.
Well, that's the problem with wheat. If people read a great book or go up and look at the blog on Wheat Belly, which is a best-selling book here, and I've had the author on my radio show several times. I'm fascinated by his research into wheat, the grain itself. It's been so hybridized. It's been genetically altered because of its hybridization. It's a form that our body never evolved to recognize. So when you eat wheat, it's like putting in a toxic substance and the body reacts against it, generating inflammation. So, and by the way, it's generates your, it's an appetite stimulant, so it'll make you hungry, and it also is an opiate to the brain. It actually will cause you to crave more wheat, which is sugar. Brains are sugar.
Yes.
You're eating sugar, which is pro-inflammatory, pro-carcinogenic. It's, cancer cells have 10 to 16 times more insulin receptors on them than healthy cells. Sugar is the food of cancer.
Yeah, someone else asked that question. I'm just looking for it, and I can't find it. They wanted to know what your take on sugar was.
My take on sugar
now
is,
you know,
never put it in your mouth. I mean, I am a fan of two sweeteners, which are a different classification of sweeteners. They're what we call 5-carbon sugars. All the other sugars are 6-carbon sugars. They tend to be more acidic in the body, and they tend to feed bacteria. So my favorite sweeteners are stevia and xylitol.
Yes, and that's what my book's about. I don't think you've seen that book,
well,
Cheryl.
No.
I'll have to send you a copy.
Absolutely.
I've got a book.
It's
called
Eat
Fat, Be Thin. Eat Fat, Be Thin. And we talk about, well, they're the two sweeteners that we advocate for, stevia and xylitol.
You know, I've just attended a 5-day conference all about xylitol. I mean, the benefits of xylitol are mind-boggling to
our health.
I know.
I wish it was called something else, because everyone thinks it sounds like a chemical.
I know. Well, it is a natural substance that we make in our body. So that's how it's being defined. Yeah. But
it's quite funny, though, because they're happy to put aspartame, which, you know, sounds pretty toxic to me. A lot of people are happy to put that in there, but they don't want to use xylitol because it sounds a bit out there.
I know. But we're helping to enlighten them. It actually is phenomenal healing sweetener. So, and even agave is, unfortunately, a 6-carbon sugar. Mm. It's very adulterated, because if you ever saw the agave plant, it only flowers once in like 5 years. I've seen those plants. And it's very rare to have enough of that sweetener from the flower. And there's such a huge demand for agave that it's adulterated with other sugars. It's not a healthy food anymore.
Well, there you go. That's interesting. And now I'll have to remember to send you my book as well. The other thing when it comes to, and we touched on it before, but I wanted to sort of reiterate, is the whole idea of people understanding their gut function a little bit better and how that helps to fuel their hormones and how that's going to obviously help them fight things like cancer and obviously affect the gene expression. So, you know, I'm always preaching about having healthy gut, and from a Chinese medicine perspective, that is really the pivot of your health. But do you want to share a little bit about your take on that?
Well, our gut health, first of all, all healing traditions say it's not what you eat, it's what you digest and assimilate. Mm-hmm. So you have to have a strong digestive energy to actually access the nutrients that feed every single cell of your body. So first of all, we know that if you're eating a junk food diet or a refined or denatured diet, you're not giving your body the key food that every cell needs. But if your digestion is impaired, you can be eating a great diet. You can have the best organic vegetables. It doesn't mean it's actually being transformed into the essences that are nourishing the cells. So we are in a very digestive, abused world. You know, there's so many things that damage our digestive system. And it can go all the way back to not being breastfed. You know, I'm in that category because we don't have the immune system. Well, our gut is sterile when we're born. And when we have a vaginal birth, that's when we're inoculated with the microflora that begins to establish
absolutely
a healthy immune system, which is in our gut, 80% of our immune system. And, you know, people don't realize, and I've seen this lately, when babies are born cesarean, very popular way of giving birth in Australia right now, you know, and when you are giving birth in a cesarean manner, that baby is lifted up out of the womb. Its first breath is taken in through the, you know, the operating theater air, and it's being colonized with the wrong kind of microflora, which can upset that baby for a lifetime, increasing the risk of things like eczema, which I see a lot. So, so it starts there, building a strong immune system. And if our gut isn't healthy and we don't have these 2,000 or more odd different types of microbiota in our gut, we actually cannot make the key nutrients like the B vitamins. We can't make our neurotransmitters, so we're more stressed and depressed and anxious. We cannot. I mean, our gut flora actually do affect gene expression and are communicating with many genes throughout the body. Everything is going on in our gut. It's a huge
emotional health too.
Emotional
health,
you know,
as well. Yeah,
and
I think.
I just want to say one other thing, and then if we're eating these foods that are inflaming our gut, now we're weakening the adrenal glands because the adrenals make our cortisol, which has to deal with inflammation. So the more inflamed our gut is, the more adrenals are exhausted, and adrenals and adrenal exhaustion actually is another contributing factor to all these chronic illnesses. We can't handle inflammation anymore. We're exhausted. So all these things are connected and, of course, making the liver more toxic with this overflow of toxins and undigested particles that get into the bloodstream that cause an autoimmune reaction.
I think the other thing to be mindful is for people that have that are on the pill or have taken antibiotics is that they need to actually go one step further and implement measures to restore the gut flora. And, you know, just because you're not taking an antibiotic or you're not on the pill doesn't mean that it'll naturally grow back. Sometimes these things don't come back unless you take action. So, you know, I recently learnt that some bacteria take up to 16 months to grow back. And I think about people that in a 16-month period would be back on antibiotics again, so that they're back to square one again, and they're just constantly playing behind the eight ball.
Well, I think this is where lacto-fermented foods, taking probiotics, good probiotics, are part of a foundational program. And something else that I researched I found really interesting, if you have the wrong kind of gut flora due to all these interventions, you are more likely to actually put on weight. So, and the more you have a weight issue, the more you are producing the wrong gut flora. And one meal, one high-fat, high-carb meal can alter your gut flora adversely. I mean, so again, it comes back to we need to be mindful and support the key functions as best we can to optimize our health.
Yeah, perfect. I have another question that I did ask you, but we didn't record it last time, about the mastectomies. If a woman is removing her breast tissue because she, as a prophylactic approach to her expression of her genes, if it's being removed, then what happens if, because as far as I understand, like I know it's quite a, can be, well, it is quite aggressive breast cancer, but if there's no tissue there and then you get breast cancer from the little tissue that's left, what's going to happen?
Well, I think it opens up a bigger question. I'm glad you brought that up, Natalie. The thing about these breast cancer genes, and we talked about them being really tumor suppressor genes, the huge piece of misinformation here is that this is related to breast cancer. It's like a breast cancer gene. No, these are tumor suppressor genes affecting how efficient your body is in suppressing the growth of, you know, of excessive growth, of cancer growth, not being able to manage DNA repair properly. And the truth about this impaired gene expression is that it can cause cancerous growth throughout your entire body. Mm-hmm. Pancreatic cancer, ovarian cancer, uterine cancer, colon cancer, lung cancer, brain cancer. This is not localized to the breast. Has anyone mentioned that in all this hullabaloo about the breast cancer gene? You don't remove your breast and therefore never have to worry about cancer again. You've got that impaired gene expression. You still have to do the work on cleaning up your diet, supporting liver detoxification, you know, removing heavy metals, you know, getting your emotions in balance, because it's going to potentially affect how your cells are being repaired, how efficient your body is at killing cancer cells appropriately. You know what I mean? It's such an illusion to say this breast cancer gene is just affecting breast cancer. Remove the breast and you will never have to live with that fear again. That is a blatant lie.
I know. I think that's the way I think a lot of people are seeing this. You know, that it's that you literally remove it and then you're good to go, and it's so much
and
more
change
than that.
Nothing in your life.
Yeah.
Just carry on.
Yeah, exactly. It's sort of like it's such a terrible message, because I mean, obviously there are people out there that have had mastectomies because they've had breast cancer, which is awful. And then, you know, they need to then go and implement all of these other things we talk about in terms of their environment, because if you don't do anything about it, nothing's going to change. It's still going to be there.
And that's the important message that I really want to be our take-home message today, is that you can alter your health destiny. You can alter your genetic destiny if you understand the power of the epigenetics, the environment, on altering how these communications and these messages and these instructions are able to get through, and how you can improve the communication, how you can optimize the instructions through diet, lifestyle, emotional healing, spiritual healing. Even studies have shown that gratitude can alter gene expression. Staying in a frequency of gratitude has profound healing effects, even to the very depth of our genes.
It's amazing. It really is. I think, but the thing is that we have to recognize it's very challenging for a lot of people, because it's unfortunately it's so outside of what we are led to believe. So of course people are going to oppose that, and sort of initial reactions are going to be that it's not necessarily true or effective. But the reality is that until we grasp this, we're not going to actually win the battle on any type of illness or cancer.
Well, it's pretty evident, isn't it, that if you get your knowledge and information from the TV and the radio and the newspapers or the women's magazines, you unfortunately are really being exposed to more propaganda than truth. And you need to seek truth and real healing knowledge elsewhere.
Exactly. Did you have any other questions come through, Cheryl?
I don't see any other questions here. Wait a minute. Let me just check.
Just thought I better check on your end, because I can keep on asking, but I thought if anyone's coming through live.
Oh, good. Sarah from Sydney. Okay, so Sarah says, hi, they're loving this morning's teleseminar. Me too. I'd love to hear more advice on what food lifestyle advice you have for balancing hormones. Okay, well, I'll give my tips, Natalie, and you can give your tips.
Sure.
Okay, I'll give some of mine. I have what I call hormone wreckers and hormone harmonizers. So let's just start with hormone wreckers. This is not going to be new to people, but maybe it'll get through on a deeper level till you get this. So the hormone wreckers would be, personally, anything that's going to spike your blood sugar levels. It's really easy. I don't want to say don't do carbs, don't do sugar. Let's just put it this way. Anything that spikes your blood sugar levels, anything that's going to cause your blood sugar, that's going to turn into sugar or is sugar, that's going to rapidly raise your insulin levels. Why? Because the latest leading edge information on the cause of all chronic illnesses, breast cancer and everything else included, plus aging, comes from blood sugar levels that are too high and are not able to be maintained. So we're spiking them all the time. Aging can spike blood sugar levels. Stress can spike blood sugar levels. Being overweight, you're insulin resistant, will affect your blood sugar levels. And eating those foods that are the refined carbohydrates, the grains, the sugars, the sodas, the alcohol, will all spike blood sugar levels. So that's huge, huge piece. One of the professors I interviewed on my radio show wrote a book called Cancer as a Metabolic Disease. A metabolic disease is a disease that is affected by the loss of energy from the cells and damage to the cells, and that's what insulin does. It damages the mitochondria, the energy-producing organisms within ourselves, and remember, it feeds cancer. So you've got to keep your blood sugar low. You've got to stay with a primary Mediterranean-type diet with fruits and vegetables and proteins. And if I want to just say something, people have to be very mindful of their proteins. And I know the vegan approach is very popular. I am not a fan of a vegan diet. Mm. Well, it didn't work for me. But I've learned more, you know, about what's really going on. I'm not telling people not to be vegans. I am saying do not restrict your diet to such a degree that you become deficient in key building blocks for your body. And one of those key building blocks happens to be protein. And I've talked to many of my colleagues, and Natalie, you probably have as well, and we're all concerned at seeing major protein deficiencies because protein builds your hormones. That's your enzymes. That's your DNA. That happens to be your, you know, your glands, your tissues, your muscle. Everything is made from the protein, so you've got to be sure to get a good quality, total, complete protein into your diet on a daily basis. And, you know, that's a huge piece. So that's absolutely one thing I want to say. And, you know, and the other thing I would say is sleep. And sleep is critical for our genes, our hormones, our detoxification pathways. And we need to sleep in the dark. We need to get a good 7 to 8 hours of deep, uninterrupted sleep. And we're a very insomniac country in Australia and here in the U.S. So we need to do things to help with sleep, which kind of goes back to the adrenals, because they, when they're strong, they help you have deep sleep.
Absolutely. The only thing I would add to that, my message is, yes, totally about proteins and fats. I always add fats to the list because we have been on this low-fat bandwagon for such a long time that it's really started to affect our fertility. And it may not even be, again, like you said before, it's also what's passed on to us from our parents, because this whole idea of low-fat eating, especially, well, in the 80s, was really the biggest fad. And, you know, we're now learning that all the deficiencies that are arriving because we haven't had these fats in our body, or we haven't been eating them to nourish our body, is a big contributor. So I'm always talking about the need for therapeutic quality fats, not your trans fats, like your fast foods and things like that, but the other fats that you would get from things like, you know, avocado and salmon and nuts and seeds and your oils and your coconut oils and things like that that are essential and fuel our hormones. So that's a big one. And then the other one for me is stress, which is sort of what you're talking about in a roundabout way. But stress to me is probably the number one factor in terms of what's affecting our fertility and our ability to conceive. And I think what people need to realize is stress just isn't being busy. Stress is just, it's that low-grade constant in the background pressure that might be from trying to conceive, or it might be from financial pressure or work, or a combination of life itself. And, you know, to recognize that is really where it starts, to actually take a step back and look in and go, okay, where are the stressors? What are they? And how? What can I do to help my body cope better with them? Because reality is that for some people can't always remove them. They can't always quit their job, or they can't always go and, I don't know, live in Hawaii, or, you know, but they need to recognize and implement ways to help their body cope better with the stress that's going on. And that might be through things like acupuncture, through the right supplementation, sleep, those sorts of things. It's all key. And if, you know, there's elements missing from your routine, of course your body's going to be affected. And the first thing that will be affected, I find, is your reproductive function.
You know, it's a really important point to make, because stress is almost a term that we just kind of let it roll off our back. We don't understand it. It's almost a buzzword, but stress will exhaust the adrenal glands, will cause your blood sugar to spike, will compromise your immune system, will alter your gut flora, will stress your liver, impair its ability to detoxify, will shrink your brain, will raise your inflammatory markers in the body, will increase oxidative stress, and there's the story about how it affects our health.
Yes, exactly. The thing too is that you need to work out what's right for your body as well, and what your body needs. It's not going to always be the same. So listening to what your body is telling you is the only way, really, that you can work out individually what's right for you. I say this because my husband's being cheeky and he's sending me messages whilst I sit here, and he's just said, "Why don't you tell everybody how much sleep you get?"
Oh, are we having true confessions here, Natalie?
Well, I actually don't need heaps of sleep, but the point is that when I go to sleep, I sleep in uninterrupted. It's uninterrupted until a child wakes, which is, you know, not necessarily when I'd choose to wake. But my thing I say to patients is I like them to be in bed at the very latest by 11 o'clock, and that's probably even a little bit too late. But I do, in my defence, always make sure I am in bed by 11 o'clock. But it is tricky, and I think having the balance is something that takes time to create, but it's identifying as well, like I said, identifying where those stresses are. And you know, I get a lot of women that write in and say, "Oh, but I'm a mother, and how can I do all of these things?" And, you know, you girls talk about having routines and doing certain things in the morning, and I just say to people, you need to work out what is right for you. And I do a routine at night time rather than a morning routine, because I do have small kids. And so, yeah, look, it is. There's not a one-size-fits-all perfect solution, although having said that, I'm sure that, you know, if there were some very apparent issues, that people would have to adapt their lifestyle accordingly.
I think it's just being mindful of the things that are important, and then each person will find how to bring that into their world. But, you know, you need to first know the things that are important. I didn't know any of these things. So, you know, my body was really falling apart. And, you know, I'm healthier now than I was 20 years ago, you know. So I can tell you I'm at a stage, and I'm at an age in my life where everyone else is, you know, falling apart. And I'm getting stronger and fitter, and I don't have any health issues, and I don't have any sleep issues. I don't have any pain. I don't, because I have been diligent over the last 20 years or longer of really being mindful of physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual well-being. I've had to, and that is our message we're sharing with people. And we all have our challenges. We're all going to have our issues, but we need to, you know, learn from them and understand that the more we commit to a balanced way of bringing all those features in, the more it's going to support us negotiating through challenging times. We don't wobble in really big ways. We just wobble in small ways. Like you're saying, you can get your adrenals back on track.
Yeah, exactly. It was such a, it was actually amazing. Like, I am so grateful for the experience, because I could identify with something that I'd never had the opportunity to experience before. So it was really, A, it was a wake up, but B, it was, wow, that's the way your body communicates, and you just need to listen rather than resist.
So I have a couple more questions, and
oh,
maybe
fab.
We can kind of complete. Okay, so there's Joyce from Penrith. Hi, Joyce.
Yep.
And she said, you recommend we reduce our carbs intake. Does that include the good carbs as well, you know, oats, quinoa? And should we also reduce sugar intake? Does that include the sugars contained in fruit? So fruit, no. So when I talk about sugars, I don't talk about fruit because fruit is fiber and minerals and vitamins, and it's a food. It's a food. When I talk about sugar, we're talking about the isolated sugars or refined sugars. That's what I mean. Or things that rapidly turn into sugar. Most of the refined grains can rapidly turn into sugar. Mm. Remember, the older you get, the more you are less able to maintain and balance your blood sugar levels. It's a feature of aging. So you have to make sure that you're balancing your blood sugar levels by taking in those healthy fats and proteins along with foods that rapidly turn into sugar like those carbs. Mm-hmm. You know, what do I think about carbs? I can tell you truthfully, it's for me, I don't eat carbs anymore. Because and for my body type, I'm carb sensitive. I rapidly turn them into sugar. I rapidly store it as fat. And I've learned, you know, I've kind of gone from gluten-free and then giving up wheat. And now, personally, I don't do any grains at all. And I don't miss them. They're not part of my life.
Well,
I don't
feel
them.
Very well after you've eaten them either.
And, so you know, so... So some people, depending how efficient their body is in managing blood sugar levels, you know, are you overweight? If you're overweight, you have metabolic syndrome and have insulin resistance. You're not going to be able to manage carbs at all at any time. But if you are feeling well and you have your ideal weight and you have your energy, you don't have any aches and pains, then some oats and quinoa. But I always say do them as kind of an ice cream scoop size. Not as a big bowl of rice that I used to eat or a big plate of pasta that I used to eat, right? And a little sauce on top. Oh, the things I did to my body before I knew I was gluten intolerant. And my health, that was part of the breakdown of my health.
Sure,
And if you really want to know how well you're managing your insulin levels, then get yourself a little glucometer, the thing that diabetics use to prick their finger, test their blood sugar levels. Do it 45 minutes after meals. I'm getting all my women to use this as a strategy to just tune in to their body and how well they're managing the sugar, since managing your blood sugar is the number one thing to manage your anti-aging protocol, right? Mm. Or to healing protocol. And if your blood sugar is on the high end, when you get that little measurement, you're getting a little feedback, a message right there that says
that's
your
clever.
Body either, you may need more minerals, you may need more chromium, you may need to put more fats, you may need to do a variety of things that are going to let your blood sugar levels stay low and even. But that is the key to health and rejuvenation, okay?
Perfect.
So one more question here. Is thermography expensive? And who can do the genomic testing for us? Where do you go for each of these procedures? Is thermography suited for all areas of the something that probably the body? Is thermography expensive? It's always an interesting question compared to what?
probably you know? Radiography.
Compared to what? Compared to getting, you know, breast cancer? You know what I mean?
True.
Compared to treatment costs? Is it expensive? Well, obviously, you have to pay for it out of pocket. It's not covered by the government, right? So how much
where to go in Australia? I don't know how much it is, but I looked up the clinic that I go to. They offer thermography, and that's in Melbourne. So I'm saying if you can get it here, you'd be able to get it in any major cities in Australia, I'd say. But there's an integrative health clinic here that do it called the NIM Clinic, and they have integrative practitioners. So that's why I'm assuming that any type of integrative practice will probably offer that.
So at $200 to $250, something like that. Is that what it is? I don't know. The genomic testing, nutrigenomics testing, which is what I've been talking about, is only available through practitioners who've been trained. So you can, look around. I do nutrigenomic testing. I do that for people over the world. So people can always do tests through me if you'd like to contact me, because we just follow up with a Skype or a conference call consultation like we're doing today. So so that's another option if people want to do that. And one other thing, thermography is a tool that has far, far many more uses than just for breast screening. You can actually assess the entire body. You can do whole body thermography. You can see areas of pain and inflammation. You can see the origins of where the inflammation is coming from, and often where we're experiencing it in our parts of our body is not the origin of the pain. It has a lot of uses. I mean, and inflammation is what fuels all chronic illnesses. So if you do thermography and do it, you know, either for the breast or a whole body, you're getting a very profound picture of the inflammatory status of your body. And that is important feedback.
Amazing. Just to wrap things up, I just got a beautiful email through, and it said, awesome interview, Nat and Cheryl. Thanks so much. I'd love to hear it again. If you have any plans to repost it, that would be great. Time to get my adrenals back on track. So, Cheryl, you've recorded this, haven't you?
I have recorded this.
Yes.
So the good news is that, yes, we've recorded it. So Nat will be able to send it out to everybody. And I just want to mention that I'm about in 2 weeks, I'll be landing in Australia, and I will be lecturing in Perth and Melbourne and Adelaide. We're getting Sydney online, Sunshine Coast, Far North Queensland. Haven't done Brisbane, but we'll be in Sunshine Coast and over in New Zealand. So we'll be talking about all these things, and Natalie, I have to get you to my events in Melbourne. I have two one-day
seminars.
I will be there. Yeah,
I'll put more information as that comes up as well. But also, if anyone needs any more links, they're all on the site as well that's linked to this post, so everyone will be able to find you that way.
Yes, and Natalie, again, thank you for making this happen. Thank you for sharing all your wisdom, and thanks for everybody for listening in and being open and curious, because that will be your greatest savior in life.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Cheryl, for making the time today. I know it's nighttime where you are, so you can go and enjoy your weekend now.
I will. Thank you so much. Thanks,
all right,
everybody.
Thank you.
Natalie.
Bye-bye. How do we know if anyone can hear us?
Wait. Oh, I sure hope I recorded it. I sure hope. I had it on, and maybe I've gone over time. Maybe that I didn't get
it. Okay, well, I'll let you, if you do, just send it through.
Oh, I'm going to freak out now. We'll go look for it. I'll go see what I've got.
Thanks, Cheryl.
All right, sweetie.
I'll see you soon, hopefully.
Okay, absolutely. We'll catch up when I'm in Melbourne, for sure.
Yeah. Absolutely.
That'd be
thank
great.
You
were wonderful. You're terrific. I love the work you're doing. I need to post more of your articles and blogs on my website. I don't know why I haven't been doing more of this, but
that's
we'll
okay.
get you
I've
up
been busy.
There.
I'll get the book over to you as well. It's a hard copy and an e-book, so I'll send the e-book. That's easy, and then you can have a look.
Send the e-book. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, you know, then we should.
You know, well, what we can do is I've been doing my radio shows through this conference call line now. I've been interviewing people. So maybe what we can do, instead of having you live on my radio show, which is always awkward hours for you, we can just arrange an interview that's over the conference line. And
yeah, that'd be fabulous.
Put it up on my major radio network.
That'd be fabulous. Yeah, because we didn't end up connecting last time. I remember it was around the time Geordie was supposed to have some type of something done. That's my son, and it just didn't go ahead. We had our wives crossed. I had the wrong day or something. So that would be fabulous.
Yeah, I didn't know you had a son with cystic fibrosis. How? Yes. So he's doing well?
He's doing so well.
Isn't
he's
that
18
great?
Months now. Yeah, he's just, really, really healthy, and he's a really chunky little unit, which is excellent.
You're doing special, obviously doing special things with him. What are you doing that's different?
Not really. I mean, we've got the special things up our sleeve if we need it, but